Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
This is Jim Santel, and it is Saturday, September 3rd. It's a beautiful day in downtown Waukesha. Here at the WAUK Radio, the Shaw in Waukesha, 540 AM, 101 FM. This is Morning Cannolis, a weekend review of the important stories in law and government and the aspiration for justice in America. Thank you so much for joining me this morning. We have a program this morning, 2 full hours of exceptional broadcasting this morning from WAUK Radio. It is Labor Day 2022, and we're going to spend most of the hour this morning and the second hour beginning at about 10 o'clock talking about labor, talking about issues important to our labor force in America, important to all of us in America as we enjoy this weekend and also are thoughtful about its history. I'm here in the studios. Calvin is my producer this morning. Calvin, during the course of the 2 hours when we're together this morning, is also going to be shielding and negotiating with phone calls as they come in. So feel free to call me as well. It's 844-967-2789. That number once again, 844-967-2789. Listeners, always welcome to call in and offer comments and questions. This morning, again, talking about labor in America here on Morning Cannolis. Our syllabus is, as always, ambitious but achievable. Very proud to say, pleased to say that in the second portion of our first hour here this morning, Don Brown, who you just heard on the broadcast here this week in Waukesha, is going to be joining me to talk about his labor on behalf of the people of the city of Waukesha and on behalf of the people of the state of Wisconsin, the entire nation, his time as an alderman here in Waukesha. We're going to talk about some of the history that he has had here, some of his focus on things important to him and to all of us, and then also a chat about some contemporary issues, at least one related to the recent history of Waukesha. All of that coming up in our second half hour this morning. Before we get to that, however, before Don comes over from the farmer's market and joins me for that discussion about labor from the perspective not only of a lifelong resident of the city of Waukesha, but also former alderman, let's chat about Labor Day, where it came from. A bit of a departure this morning. Normally, I spend the first few moments talking about the important events in history, local history, state history, national history, and world history that happened on the particular day that we are broadcasting this morning. Again, Saturday, September 3rd, going to abandon that approach a bit to talk instead about Labor Day. Where did it come from? What are its genesis elements? So where did it derive from? How did this happen in America that we now have a full federal holiday in the United States of America, now a weekend in which we observe Labor Day, often a time of rest and relaxation, of family gatherings, but also a time of great history and recollection about where we came from and the dramatic, important contributions that the labor forces of our nation have made to our life, our livelihoods. Where did Labor Day come from? Well, beginning way back in the late 19th century, a time when trade unions and labor movements were growing, there were some diverse groups of trade unionists who were beginning to choose some dates in which to celebrate who they are, what labor is all about. In the United States here, a September holiday called Labor Day was first proposed in the early 1880s, when we first began to hear about this in a sort of an organized way. Now, true to most history, there are alternative counts of the event's origins, and I'm going to give you both of those, and you can pick and choose depending upon your particular historical perspective on this. Descendants of two men with very similar last names claim that they were the true fathers of the holiday, and let me tell you about the first of those stories and then the second of those right after that. According to one early history of Labor Day, the event originated in connection with something called a General Assembly of the Knights of Labor. That's Knights, K-N-I-G-H-T-S, of Labor, the Knights of Labor. They were getting together in New York City in September of 1882. And in connection with, as a part of this sort of clandestine assembly at that time, a public parade of various labor organizations was held on September 5th. And it was under the auspices, under the direction, the control, the authorization, if you will, of something called the Central Labor Union. The Central Labor Union, the CLU, that was a group that was organized in New York. And the secretary of the CLU, here is the first name. His name is Matthew McGuire, M-A-G-U-I-R-E, Matthew McGuire. He was credited, for the most part, for proposing that a national holiday recognizing, celebrating labor in America be established, and that it be held on the first Monday of each September. And that was one of the origin stories. Matthew McGuire, and again, in 1882, when the Knights of Labor are convening, this fellow proposes that we have a national holiday recognizing labor. Now, there's another story also involving a McGuire, a little bit different spelling, but perhaps the same pronunciation. His name was Peter McGuire, M-C, capital G-U-I-R-E. Again, Matthew McGuire, M-A-G-U-I-R-E. Peter McGuire, M-C, G-U-I-R-E. Peter McGuire was a vice president of something called the American Federation of Labor, leader of the American Federation of Labor. And after a visit to Toronto in Canada, he came back and he remembered that he saw all sorts of parades there that were celebrating labor. And that happened in May. And he put forward this proposal in the spring of that same year of 1882. And according to this McGuire, the Peter McGuire, on May 8th in particular of 1882, he made a proposition to the Central Labor Union. Again, the same entity we talked about in connection with the other McGuire, Matthew McGuire. He made this proposal, according to this history, in New York City, that a day be set aside for what he called a general holiday for the laboring classes. That's how Peter McGuire described his proposal at that time to this major organization, the Central Labor Union, meeting in New York City. And according to McGuire, he also recommended that the event should begin with a street parade common to what he saw in Toronto, common to what was developing throughout the United States of America in various venues, places around our nation. And that was supposed to be a public demonstration of the organized labor's solidarity, its strength, its import. And with the march would be followed by a picnic of some kind, a time for families, which is a tradition, of course, that continues to this day and to 2022. And the notion was at the time that labor unions would use this event, this special day, recognizing the laboring classes, as a fundraiser, selling tickets to it in a way of elaborating and on the story about labor, but also ensuring that their coffers were filled to promote the good things that labor organizations, including this Central Labor Union, was doing at the time. He McGuire, M-C, G-U-I-R-E, first suggested that the first Monday in September would be an ideal date for that public celebration. Why? He was looking outside. He said, well, it's optimum weather, and placed on that place in the calendar is about midway between the 4th of July and the Thanksgiving. Public holidays are really established at that time. So he said, you know, this would be a good time. Summer coming to an end, summer between 4th of July and Thanksgiving. First Monday in September, again, very much parallel to what Matthew McGuire in this alternative history had also talked about, was advocating for at the time. And it was common. It was common way back then in the late 19th century, 1882 and going forward, and even before then, that those picnics and public gatherings featured speakers by prominent labor leaders, and again, families gathering together a day, perhaps of rest, but specifically to, again, promote this notion that labor is what makes America great and that keeps us strong. And in 1909, the American Federation of Labor, the convention that was assembled at that time, did in fact designate the Sunday preceding Labor Day as Labor Sunday. And it was dedicated to the spiritual and educational aspects of the entire labor movement. So you had a bit of a religious aspect to this as well, celebrating something called the Labor Sunday in advance of Labor Day itself. Again, a time of focusing on all of that. And this secondary date sort of failed to gain a lot of significant traction at the time, although many churches, many other places of worship, and many diverse religions, temples and synagogues and gurdwaras and other places where people come together to worship, often do to this day recognize, as they will tomorrow, Sunday of 2022, the 4th of September, that Labor Day is a significant event in the history of our nation, including that of the spiritual community. Well, the popularity of this event spread across the country, even though it wasn't yet acknowledged very formally by the government. In 1887, for example, the state of Oregon became the first state in the country to make Labor Day an official public holiday. A public holiday in 1887, Oregon is the first state that does it. And then by 1894 or so, about 30 United States states were by that time celebrating Labor Day in some way, many of them with very elaborate celebrations, others less so. But 1894, something over half of the, about 30 states or so at that time were celebrating this important holiday. Congress in that same year, 1894, passes a bill recognizing the first Monday of September as Labor Day and making it an official federal holiday. That happens in 1894 after, again, this advocacy with sort of this dual, separate and, if you will, dueling histories about where this came from in 1882. Grover Cleveland, who was the president at that time, signed the bill into law on June 28th of 1894. The federal law at that time, signed by President Cleveland at the time, only made it a holiday for federal workers. And as late as 1930s, unions were encouraging workers to strike to make sure they got the day off. And eventually, virtually all states, including the District of Columbia and the United States territories, have subsequently made Labor Day a statutory holiday. And so the efforts of the labor unions and the labor efforts and the leadership going way back to 1882, before that and after that, were successful ultimately in identifying this important day, Labor Day, which we're celebrating this weekend here in the state of Wisconsin, towns, cities, villages, and glad to have you celebrating with me on this bright and sunny Saturday morning, September 3rd, 2022. A footnote to that, and that is that Labor Day is distinct from what's sometimes called May Day. Also, May 1, it was also known as International Workers' Day, often known as Law Day as well. It's a different celebration, also acknowledging and the significance of workers worldwide, again, usually May 1, which we also recognize here in the United States of America. Come back right after this first break. We're going to chat more about Labor Day and some very recent history that is coming out of our nation's news media just this past week regarding labor in America. This is Morning Cannolis. Stay with us here at WAUK Radio, The Shaw in downtown Waukesha. Back. This is Jim Santel. It's Morning Cannolis. Thanks again so much for joining me here in the studio at WAUK Radio. I am joined by producer Calvin, who is working with me to ensure that your calls and your comments are part of our program this morning as well. It is Labor Day weekend. Monday is going to be Labor Day itself. And as I said right before the break, we have got a rich and important history here in America that resulted in the official recognition by the Congress, by the president, and by all of us as an important day on Monday, Labor Day 2022, going way back to 1882, these different alternative histories for where this came from, but they came together in the end, and a recognition once again, as was initially called, a general holiday for the laboring classes, we recognize to this day, premised upon that early work of the leadership way back then, acknowledging and promoting the importance of labor in our nation. Labor, as all of you well know, continues to be the backbone of America and keeps us strong, keeps us alive. Just this past week, just yesterday, as a matter of fact, some important news coming out of the Federal Reserve about labor in America. Lots of issues recently in our national attention, in our national discussion about labor. And just yesterday, the Federal Reserve announced some significant information about where we are with jobs, how things look economically, and what labor is all about in America, plainly indicating that job growth slowed in August, but still remained fairly strong. And that's got the Fed, if you will, sort of walking a tightrope, as some of the leadership there and the Fed chair has said. They plainly want to cool off a labor market that some saw as perhaps too hot, with too many jobs and not enough workers to fill them. On the other hand, if they go too far, they could undo some of the progress of the past 2 years and leave millions of people without work. So again, this debate and this economic analysis inside the Fed to make decisions premised upon the best interests of all of us economically. So what was that government data that was released just yesterday? It suggests the Fed actually has managed to maintain that balance pretty well. It has raised interest rates over this past year, as you know, and though its work is plainly far from done. So what was the specific information that was released by the Fed in this past week, just yesterday? We know now, again, Labor Day coming up on Monday, we know that employers added 315,000 jobs last month. That, of course, would be the month of August. And that was a substantial slowdown, as I indicated, from the more than 500,000 jobs added in July. But still, most people say a pretty solid number here in America. The labor force grew by more than 750,000 people, which should ease concerns about a shortage of workers, even while wage growth cooled. All that coming out of the Fed just yesterday. The representatives of Wells Fargo said, overall, there's a lot of to like if you're a Fed official right now. Hiring remains robust, but on a more sustainable basis. And so a lot of the response to that is fairly strong, although, again, not nearly as strong as some of the reports were earlier in this year. February of this year, 2022, well in excess of 600,000 jobs created in that month alone, teetering somewhere around 2,000, 3,000, 400,000 jobs for most of recent times, going way back to August of 2021. Kind of a low in June, as I indicated, back up in July and a bit down in August at 315,000 jobs. So what does the president say? What does the president say about this report coming out just yesterday in advance of Labor Day 2022? This is what President Joe Biden said yesterday. He said, jobs are up, wages are up, people are back to work. And we're seeing some signs, he went on to say, that inflation may be, I'm not overpromising, that's our president describing with some sort of tepid optimism. He said, maybe beginning to ease. He said, coupled with falling gas prices, America has some really good news going into the Labor Day weekend. We know as well, according to the reports, the information released by the Fed just yesterday, that the unemployment rate edged up in August at about 3.7%. It was at a five-decade low of about 3.5% in July, which again is a very low unemployment rate in our nation's history. Most observers and economic gurus say that that increase was partly a result of more people reentering the labor force, looking for work. But it also probably reflected, according to the Fed, a modest rise in the number of people losing their jobs as well. And so all of that, again, being monitored very closely. Economists, again, responding to this news just yesterday as we go into Labor Day of 2022. A lot of economists are warning that a cool down in the labor market will mean less bargaining power for employees, particularly those in the bottom rungs of the career ladder. Also going on to say many economists' wage growth soared last year for people working in restaurants and hotels and other service areas, but those gains have also slowed significantly. And very importantly, the unemployment rate for black workers rose sharply in August, just last month, to 6.4%, and that was double the rate for white workers. Double the rate for white workers among black workers here in the United States of America. Again, a lot of work to do there in terms of racial equity and ensuring that all of us, regardless of race, background, history, and other immutable characteristics, can enjoy the fruits of labor as we recognize and celebrate this weekend, Labor Day of 2022. In the second hour this morning, in our second hour of Morning Cannolis, we're going to go back to some of those historical issues and chat about two, three, four, maybe even five major cases that the United States Supreme Court has issued in recent years having to do with labor. We're going to look specifically to the role of labor unions and this important connection between paying fees and dues for admission into and membership in labor. So the Supreme Court has said a lot about that, including a case not too long ago, just a couple of years ago, involving a labor union and the obligations of non-union members to pay dues. That's a case that is going to be discussed in our second hour called Janus, and we're going to talk about that at some length because it is important, even on this Labor Day of 2022. Then we're also going to talk about the other side of labor, much related to that, and that is employment cases. We've got a number of different employment cases we're going to be chatting about, including a case called Bostock versus Clayton County just a couple of years ago, having to do with the extent to which Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 protects employees against discrimination because they're gay or transgender, the LGBT community, and the decision there in Bostock to acknowledge that the word sex, as it appears in the Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, does in fact provide protections for people in the employment setting based upon the Supreme Court's interpretation understanding. So some very important Supreme Court cases. We're going to chat about those in our second hour toward the end of our time together this morning. But before we do that, after the break, I'm going to welcome back to the studios here after his morning over at the Farmers Market. Don Brown's going to be joining us to talk about labor, talk about his history and the important work that he has done here in Waukesha on behalf of all of us. Continue to join us. Stay with us here on Morning Cannolis, WAUK Radio, 540 AM, 101 FM. We're back. This is Morning Cannolis. It is Saturday, September 3rd, 2022. Thank you so much for joining me. Continuing our discussion this morning about all things labor, including some history about where Labor Day comes from in our first half an hour, and then a little bit of insight into the recent announcements by the Fed about our labor situation here in the United States of America. Some fairly decent news about the number of jobs created in the month of August. Not as high as it has been in past months, but nonetheless a significant comeback, and unemployment for most populations, not all populations, remains at an historic lows. We still have to do lots of things when it comes to ensuring that unemployment in our communities of color likewise is reduced to levels that it is among whites in America. And so we're chatting all morning today about labor. And as I said, the end of our second hour, we're going to be talking about some recent Supreme Court cases, not surprisingly, here on Morning Cannolis, which we spend a lot of time talking about, some cases involving labor unions and the capacity that unions have to require that members and non-members pay dues. And what has the Supreme Court said about that issue? Also chatting about some discrimination cases and the extent to which our discrimination statutes extend to all Americans beyond just those who may have been contemplated to provide coverage under the Civil Rights Act of 1964 when it was first enacted. We're going to chat about that in our second hour. Right now, I am thrilled, honored to have joining me here at WAUK Studios, hot off his time at right down the street here at the Farmers Market this week in Waukesha, my good friend, my partner here at WAUK, Don Brown. Don, welcome to Morning Cannolis.
Hey, Jim, thanks for having me, and very glad to be back in the official office of former Alderman Don Paul Brown, the also known as the Walk Radio Studio. So
let's talk about that right from the start. We are sitting in the studios right in Wisconsin Avenue. A good way to get into our discussion this morning. This was in fact your office. Is that correct? This is your trappings right here.
Well, yes, and it's more of a play on words. Okay. It wasn't actually my official office, but in light of the national politics, or the former president has his office at Mar-a-Lago, and I used to make a joke that our studios here were the Mar-a-Lago of the Midwest, but that was not subscribed to any political affiliation, but just in a similar, you know, we were both exiles. You know, as many know, I lost my district because of redistricting, and so when I was approached by Mike Crudy for this opportunity to do my show, I thought it'd be a lot of fun, since people knew me as an alderman, to kind of poke fun at that and to let them know that I'm still active in the community and still try to position myself as a community leader the best that I can.
Absolutely. I'm going to spend some time again. Don, thanks so much for joining me this morning. I'm going to chat a lot about you morning.
All right.
And again, a former alder from December of 2020 until April of this year, correct? Right?
So it was actually from May of 2019.
All right. The first term, right? Exactly. Yep. And we're going to chat more about some of the things that were important to you at that time. I'm going to talk about your family first.
Sure.
We're going to talk about a little bit of that, because I know you've got some wonderful members of your family. Spouse Melissa, and you and she have raised four children, correct?
Right? That's correct. And right? Melissa's also a community leader. She is the director of instruction at La Casa de Esperanza's school, their charter school, after serving over 20 years at the United Community Center, the Bruce Guadalupe Community Schools. She is also president of the Waukesha South Booster Club. And, throughout our time together has done a great job in leadership and volunteer capacities. And, of course, number one is as a wife and a mother. We dropped off our oldest, her firstborn, Jordan, at lacrosse yesterday.
Right,
and
right.
It was obviously very emotional for her, but I hope that she understands the pride she must feel for all of our remarkable children, but in particular our oldest, Jordan. She's been a great role model for the younger siblings, and she's living her dream.
Right.
Her number one school is lacrosse.
Right.
National honor students in National Honor Society student in high school, and was on the varsity dance team since her freshman year. And we just cannot be prouder of the life that she's living. And that's just a big reflection, especially on her mother.
Not a bit surprising, coming from this terrific family that you and Melissa have created together. We know, as you just indicated, not only a laboring to establish this wonderful family, but also a very important laborer here, right in Waukesha as well. So we acknowledge her on this Labor Day.
Thank
as
you.
as we do you. Your other children, Kiara, seventh grader,
our youngest,
right. And also, obviously, starting school just this past week.
Right? Yep, at Horning Middle School, just right here in our neighborhood in Banting Park. So it's great to have a neighborhood school.
Wonderful.
Close to home,
right.
Walking distance.
Good. Evan, who's a junior, both in the classroom and off the classroom on the football field, is a great success.
Yeah, had the walk-off pick, to beat Nathan Hale last week. Last night, not so great. Lost a heartbreaker to Oconomowoc, but that's to be expected in the Classic 8, arguably the toughest conference in the state. And he was, disappointed in himself. He played hard. He had quite a few balls thrown to him last night. Didn't make very many catches, unfortunately, but he played well. He played great defense as always, and was a factor in the one touchdown they scored. He basically kind of ran interference from the split end, cutting across the middle while the flanker came to the outside and was wide open. And so, everybody does their part. And I couldn't be prouder for Evan. He tries hard, and he's also been a great role model for his baby sister. And then our oldest son, Michael, in his senior year at John Hersey High in Arlington Heights, and
wonderful.
Doing great things. So.
Right. And about all that, including something else that you do on Friday evenings. It just started this season, right? Doing the Waukesha South High School football games, doing the not just the color commentary, but the play-by-play.
Yeah, I do the play-by-play, and I get some help with color from Johnny Watermelon, our ad sales manager here. And, I used to broadcast my daughter's softball games. One of the team moms has there's a product called Mevo, which allows you to set up really nice camera equipment. And then there's a mic. You get a free mic on your cell phone. So I had a lot of fun the last couple of years doing broadcast. And so when this opportunity came to broadcast Waukesha Sports, Waukesha South High School sports, couldn't be more thrilled, especially since I've known a lot of these boys, the junior class, that's my son's class. Many of those boys have been together since fifth grade, so it's just really been a privilege and an honor to see them grow. And I used to broadcast their games when, parents would volunteer and I would do the PA. But I wouldn't just do the normal PA. I'd broadcast the game live, and the refs had to talk to me a few times. Like, right, yeah, no, you can't do that. And I'm like, yeah, right. Well, come up here and stop me. But
right.
So it's really been fun to be able to do this on a higher scale. Mm-hmm. You know, I've heard feedback some family members of the players as far away as Hawaii to the west and Delaware to the east have been tuning in to Walk Radio to listen to their brothers and nephews and the like.
It's the wonder and the joy of radio, right? And
you can have that. I love radio.
Right?
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And you have again been a major player here at WAK Radio.
Thank you.
All of these things, all these important things, and bring a huge amount to it. So
sure.
I know as well, done a bit of research. You're born in Orchard Park, New York. And then
that's correct. Well, officially born in South Buffalo, Irish enclave.
Okay.
But yeah, grew up in Orchard Park, home of the Bills.
Right. Okay.
Founded
Very
by
good.
Quakers over 200 years ago.
Sure.
And so a lot of history, and it was a great town. We were there visiting my mother last August, and it's always great to connect with family and to be there. It's a wonder. Like Milwaukee, Western New York is a beautiful place to be in the summertime. Lots to do.
And family then migrated eventually here to Wisconsin and Waukesha in particular.
Well,
tell me
all
about
over.
That,
you know,
right?
I'm the youngest of 10.
Right.
And Mom and Dad remained in Orchard Park, and only two siblings, my oldest brother and my fourth oldest brother, live like on either side of where my mom lives. My father passed away last year after a long 90-year run and a great life. Son of immigrants, worked four jobs to pay through college, and really lived the American dream. And you know, got to put all his kids through college. Just you know, amazing legacy he left for us. And so he's still very much a part of our lives. And
absolutely.
So yeah, oldest and the number four are on either side of my, like, about a block away.
Wonderful.
And then I've got a sister that's I guess we should go in order. My second oldest brother is a doctor in Birmingham, Alabama. And he used to work with the Alabama Sports Medicine Clinic with Dr. James Andrews, the celebrated surgeon. And a sister, Nina. So I came up to Milwaukee from Chicagoland, had a former client had an opportunity with this. And that's what brought me here. And Milwaukee reminded me a lot of Western New York, while the Buffalo area, just, you know, great cost of living, great access to green space, a lot of things you can do for free or much more affordably. And only an hour away from a big city, you know, like Buffalo is to Toronto, Milwaukee is to Chicago. And so I met Melissa here and decided this is where I should make my home. And I love it. And Waukesha has been very good to me. And, you know, had an opportunity to participate in local government. And but yeah, rest of the family. Sister Trish is retired. She got retired at age 48 after a career in healthcare with Baxter. And she floats between Denver and Chicago. Brother Sean's in Dallas. He telecommutes to Bozeman, Montana. And he's also been in the healthcare distribution side of things in an executive role. And who else did I miss here? Sister's a doctor in Richmond, Virginia. And my oldest sister lives up the road in Nina. Her husband got a great opportunity 20 years ago to manufacturing. So he's with the Walker Forge there up in Nina, and they love their life up there.
Also, wonderful people all. Lots of laborers out there,
there
as we acknowledge
it
on Labor Day. I'm going to chat more about that with my special guest, John Brown, right after the break. We're going to chat more about his academic background at Michigan State University. And then, Don, I want to talk to you about your commitment, especially to history here in Waukesha, and some recent history that also is a part of your time as an alderman here in Waukesha. Continue to listen in here on Morning Cannolis on WAUK Radio, 540 AM, 101 FM.
Interesting.
Once again, this is Morning Cannolis. It is Saturday, September 3rd. It is Labor Day weekend. We're spending the entire two-hour period saluting labor and the importance of labor in America. My guest right now, my special guest, my colleague, my friend Don Brown, who is here talking not only about his family and, yes, consistent with our theme, the labor force that they have brought throughout the United States of America, including right here in Wisconsin, his wonderful wife, Melissa, and their children, who will be a part of the labor force in the future. here doing equally important things, right? I'm sure that they've already contributed a lot, right, to the overall well-being of their family and their communities beyond themselves. So looking forward to that as well. Don, I wanted to chat more about your background in particular. Michigan State University, class of 1989, and gosh, at least 4 degrees by my count. International relations, urban policy, labor relations, HR management. So a lot of things related
actually
to labor.
2 degrees, okay, but right. It was my bachelor's. Well, first of all, growing up in New York State, you know, the SUNY system has a lot of great colleges, very affordable. And I had the opportunity to go to Michigan State because a brother in front of me got a full ride to Boston University for football back when they had Division I football. I know many of you know it as the hockey school.
Right.
And then my sister above him, she was a class valedictorian. She had several academic scholarships that afforded us, our family, the opportunity to go to University of Virginia. And so it freed up the I met a college rep from Michigan State that was looking at the time Michigan State was making a bigger commitment to recruiting more out-of-state students. And my guidance counselor connected me with him, and I was interested in studying political science. And he told me all about James Madison College, which is a
terrific,
wonderful residential
it
school
is,
there. And
it is, yes.
I was able to dual major in international relations and urban policy problems. And, you know, you think Big Ten school, 42,000 students, but my bachelor's degree, there was never more than, we always had about 1,000 students in this residential college. And by the time I was a junior senior, the student-teacher ratio was like 12 or in some cases 6-1. So it was a really great experience. And then I was also accepted in their School of Labor Relations, which was a big honor to me because that's behind Cornell at the time was considered the best school in the country, the best master's program.
And still
for
is.
Labor relations.
Still has a great reputation, right?
Yeah. So that was a real, and I got to, you know, have some wonderful professors that were playing big roles in HR and in labor relations. Daniel Kruger, who I mentioned, was a leading national arbitrator and mediator.
And those kinds of people do inspire, right? There's
absolutely
no doubt that the work that Professor McGuire has done influenced you and continues to have an impact upon us through you and the work that you did there at Michigan State and beyond. Right now, in addition to all of your roles here at WAUK Radio, father and spouse and community leader, you're also a writer and an
That's
academic
correct.
And also all an intellectual force at Spiritist Writing, right? Blogs
That's
for executives,
the company. Yep.
Right?
So we, at the time, I was involved in a dream job with a former client/employer, and we were opening up an international division for a community publisher in Dublin, Ireland. And my family's Irish. I have dual citizenship through my grandparents. My grandfather was in the United Grain Elevators Union in Buffalo. And through my grandfather, I have dual citizenship. So it afforded me great flexibility to work in Ireland and reconnect with some relatives, which was wonderful.
Very important.
But the guy I was working for was selling his partnership in the company at the time. We were going to try to open up a new market in Northern Ireland. The original owner wasn't a big fan of the model. And so seeing the writing on the wall, I had an opportunity to do some freelance writing. And that's how Spiritist Writing was born. It started out as a few brochures, ended up doing like regular blogs and emails. And for this client, it was a healthcare company down south. The blogs was part of an overall strategy, a big part that helped increase their sales significantly by 17%. So it was gratifying to me to know that, you know, good writing can have a really profound impact on a company's profitability.
Absolutely,
and it gave me the confidence to pursue more opportunities and grow the company. And so I represent the Vinyl Siding Institute, doing blogs for them and case studies and some other trade associations. I manage some online communities, including the Center for Responsible Seafood, which has been an amazing experience. And locally, I get to do grant writing for Ronald McDonald House Charities here
Terrific.
In Milwaukee, which is, you know, one of the great causes of my life.
Absolutely.
I lost a brother to leukemia before I was born, back when the research just wasn't there. And also have a sister that's a survivor of severe depression. And so it's neat to be part of this this mission. And I mentioned my sister because Ronald McDonald opened up a family room last year at Rogers Behavioral Health, and it's only the second in the RMHC global charity system that's partnered with a behavioral health hospital. So really grateful to be part of that that mission.
Absolutely. The power of language, right? Not just
sure
spoken
is, yep.
word that you and I are engaging in right now. You do so much here at WAK Radio and beyond that in the city of Waukesha, but also the written word, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Language is important. Teaching language, communicating well, all those kinds of things coming out of your education, again, way back in New York and through Michigan State University and right here in Wisconsin since then. So good for you to do all of that. A lot of that
Thank
ability
you.
To communicate, Don, not only doing the play-by-play for football games here in Waukesha, but also as an alderman, as we indicated, from 2019 to 2022 right here. And I want to chat a little bit about public service
sure.
in the remaining time of this hour, and then continuing the second hour, if you can stick around. We want
Please,
to chat
yeah.
more about that.
I'm really
that.
Glad to be here, Jim.
And I'm delighted to have you here on a Labor Day weekend when we're focusing on people like you who have contributed so much to our community, working hard and continuing the important work that laborers do here in America and right here in the state of Wisconsin as well. I know because we have talked about this from time to time in the past, that both as an alderman, but also as a member of our Waukesha community, that you have a very special interest in Theodora Winton Yeomans. Born in 1863, died at almost 70 years old in 1932. She was a journalist. She was an editor. She was a women's suffragette activist and has a very special connection right here in Wisconsin, including right here in Waukesha as well. And I'll do a little bit more history, and then I want to ask you about your
sure.
interest in her and what you have committed to when it comes to that. She was the president of the Wisconsin Women's Suffragette Association. She was a part of the Waukesha Freeman right here.
A reporter, right? Yeah.
1880s. She had a column, I understand, Don, called Women's World.
Oh, wow.
She was also involved in something called the Anti-Tuberculosis Association way back in 1908. And then, as you know, and want to follow up with you on your focus on this history, 1912 and 1917, she organized here in Wisconsin a couple of referendums that failed to establish the franchise for women. Ultimately, because of what she did here in Wisconsin throughout the nation, 19th Amendment, the Constitution's right here, 1919, it is passed, establishing the right of women to vote. Wisconsin, as you have told me, the first state in the union to ratify that. And all of that, again, not only one of Wisconsin's very proud historical figures, but also right here in Waukesha as well. Yeomans Park, right down the street from us, named after her. And I want to chat with you about the reasons why, number one, your interest in that, and number two, if I can make this a multiple question, why is it important for us to remember that and to think about
sure.
What she did, what Theodora Yeomans did, and her lasting legacy for
sure.
you and all of us?
Yeah. Well, I have Matt Flynn to thank because when he was vacationing in March, Mike Crude asked me to fill in for Matt, and so Matt Flynn direct for 1 week became a pop-up morning radio show we called Don Brown Connect, and it was focused on Waukesha. And I really wanted to add some flavor to the show and was really looking for different material to celebrate Waukesha. And I remembered, and here's why I have Mayor Sean Riley to thank, because in my first term as alderman in September of 2019, which marked the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment, Mayor Riley issued a proclamation honoring Theodora. And now, is it Yeomans or Yeomans?
We'll do either one of those
on
right
yeah,
now,
yeah.
and I'll get my language correct, right?
But,
right?
you know, potato, potato, Theodora Yeomans or Yeomans, she's the reason Wisconsin was the first state to ratify the 19th Amendment, and just, you know, a remarkable legacy that I believe doesn't get celebrated enough here in Waukesha. And so we spent some time on Don Brown Connect last March talking about that, and then it became a part of my staple when I would announce the show, you know, coming to you live from the office of former Alderman Don Brown.
Right here.
Located in the NAMI building, so a big shout out to NAMI and the wonderful things they're doing for people and families dealing with behavioral and mental health. And so when I said right around the corner from Theodora Yeomans Park, where we're proud to honor our suffragette tradition, and so I'll play some David Bowie Suffragette City while
terrific.
I'm here, as well as Today I Had Wings doing Jet, you know, and
terrific.
So a little nickname. But I think it's important, the right to work, you know, as a grandson of immigrants, or the right to vote, excuse me, and the right to work, of course, but the right to vote is a very, you know, it's a right, and it's a very sacred right, and it's come under a lot of attack, I think, by many people that are misinformed or really don't understand the importance of that franchise. And a lot of blood was spilled by women, some men, but by women.
Absolutely.
To get this right to vote. And so I think we all have an obligation to those women And I'm sure, and Theodora Humans, I'm sure she endured a lot. I haven't done enough study, but I'm sure she endured a lot of physical and emotional abuse from the status quo in her efforts. And so, yeah, I think we, as Waukesha residents, have an obligation to honor that legacy and that heritage. And again, big shout out to Mayor Riley for that proclamation. And another great opportunity while being in government is you get exposed to that, a lot of the rich history here.
Absolutely. And that's one portion of it. A big important thing we recognize this weekend. We're going to chat more about that in our second hour. My good friend and colleague Don has agreed to stay with me to chat more about his time as an alderman, including the history here and some recent history as well, right here in Waukesha, WAUK Radio 101 FM 540 AM.